It is indeed a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service, in the center of our lives, we create moments to honor the quiet parts of life. You may use these first few moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us join in an attitude of prayer. As we enter our society's Christmas season, let us remember the difference between glitter and real gold. We are seduced into thinking the gifts of the season are to be measured by their price tags. Let us remember that the most precious gifts of this or any season are gifts of the Spirit that don't have to cost much money at all. Jesus of Nazareth once asked what good it did if you gained the whole world and lost your soul. In a world where this distinction is often lost, let us try to give gifts to nurture the souls of those for whom we care. For the highest of holy days and holidays, let us measure our gifts by the highest standards. May we and those we love remember the coming holidays with warmth and gratitude as days when we gave and received gifts of the Spirit and love. Gifts of the Spirit, not something less. Let this be our holiday prayer, that we are opened to give and receive gifts of the Spirit in this most spiritual of seasons, and that we may be grateful for the opportunity once more to give and receive in gratitude for the manifold blessings of life. Amen. There's a saying I learned in divinity school that the first word spoken in religion should always be no. The reason for that is because there's so much nonsense in any religious tradition, that's always so much easier and more seductive than the deeper messages, that you have to say no to the nonsense to make room for something worth saying yes to. I think there's hardly anywhere that this rule of saying no first applies more than it does to Christmas. There is so much nonsense around the Christmas season every year that each year I feel like I have to shovel through more bad stuff in order to find the good stuff. Now, you may be thinking, how can a minister not like Christmas? Isn't that like part of his job description? But I've made a list, and so how do I dislike Christmas? Let me count the ways. See if you share some of these. One is just a knee-jerk reaction against anything that's so overhyped. The Christmas ads are now starting before Thanksgiving. I think there should be a law against that. Another thing I have against Christmas is that Jesus would have hated it, and that needs to count for something. And when we wrap something just in sweetness and light, as we wrap Christmas, then psychologically the shadow side of it grows and gets nastier. And the shadow side of the Christmas season is that there is more depression, there are more people feeling lonely and left out than at any other time of the year. And if you don't have a family, especially one that looks like a Hallmark card, well, there aren't any pictures of single people enjoying Christmas alone, you know? And there aren't any pictures of non-traditional families enjoying Christmas in non-traditional ways. And then having to pretend for a whole month that all the hoopla is primarily about a religious holiday is a lie. It's about selling stuff, and everybody knows it. All of the Christmas decorations you see were paid for and put up by merchants, not churches. We read that we're expected to spend an average of $1,000 each on Christmas presents this year, as though it's almost our duty. And I think there's something about that that's both irritating and rude. We create these pictures of happy Norman Rockwell or Hallmark card people, and then into that picture we throw a whole country full of frenzied, tired people who are working more hours for less real money than they got 30 years ago, pressured by hokey ads to buy things that their kids don't need but have been convinced that they want. And all this is wrapped in tinsel and accompanied by a chorus of digital angels singing not to the prophets of the Bible but to the prophets of the bottom line. It's irritating. Sometimes I think, look, let's just be honest. If you want to celebrate the holiday in the true spirit of American Christmas, go buy a bunch of shiny stuff nobody needs that will all be broken by next year, wear a smile you don't feel, and sing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer until you pass out. And then finally, I always struggle with the fact that ministers are expected to do some sort of a command sermon, finding reasons to be joyous, trying to convince you that this is, after all, a wonderful time of year. Yes, this will be one of those sermons, but not yet. Some people say it's an important time of year because it's the time of the winter solstice, which has been celebrated for 3, 4, 8, 10,000 years or more. Well, all right. The solstice was a big deal a long time ago as a sign that the sun was coming back, that the days would be longer, we'd have more light, and it would soon be warm again. But the seasons of the sun don't mean a lot anymore. We can buy fresh food and fruit from all over the world every day of the year. Electric lights make our nights just as bright as we want them. And as far as being warm, the last time there was any snow in Austin, there was a Democrat in the White House who was being impeached. All right, these are some of the reasons that I begin every Christmas season by rooting for the Grinch. And you know I'm not alone here. You may be surprised to learn, as I was, about the huge, huge number of anti-Christmas websites on the internet. I did some research. I knew you'd want to know these things. If you do a Google search and type in anti-Christmas, you'll find 11,000 sites. Type in Bah Humbug, you'll find 58,000 sites. There are 587,000 sites under Christmas Depression. And if you just type in I Hate Christmas, you'll find 1,200,000 websites from others who do too. Some other site names aren't fit to repeat, a lot of them, but you can type almost every vulgar word you've ever heard, pair it with Christmas, and find literally hundreds of thousands of websites put up by others who are saying no to Christmas because, I assume, there's something deeper that they would like to say yes to. So this isn't just one or two grouches. There's a conspiracy. This is millions of grouches. They're out there everywhere. Heck, it could even be a movement. Now, if it's a movement, and I like to think that it might be, then it's a movement that reminds me of my all-time favorite graffiti, which was penciled in the grout between the tiles on a men's restroom wall in the Divinity School at the University of Chicago, placed just where all men were sure to see it. Someone had written, "We hide in the cracks now, but soon we will take over the tiles." So this could be that kind of a conspiratorial movement. Something hiding in the cracks of our culture now, waiting to burst forth and take over. It could be. Now there are really at least three different parts, different levels and dimensions to the Christmas season. Somewhere buried under all this glitter is the idea of remembering a man named Jesus who said a lot of things worth remembering. Buried even deeper is the fact that when Christmas was assigned the date of December 25th, which happened in the 4th century, it was assigned to that date to cover the winter solstice celebration in the religion of Mithraism, which in the 4th century was Christianity's biggest competitor. I don't want to talk about either of those things today. Today I want to talk about the third thing, the star of Christmas, the real center of all the decorations and all the sales, and of course, I mean the patron saint of the shopping season, Santa Claus. We'll talk about the solstice and some of the religious dimensions of Christmas the next two Sundays. And on Christmas Eve, we'll retell the traditional Christmas story and sing a lot of nice Christmas songs. But today I want to talk about Santa Claus. That's where we get the idea that Christmas is supposed to be about giving gifts. And I want to make sure we understand what kind of gifts it's supposed to be about giving. Our name, Santa Claus, is a corruption of St. Nicholas. The original St. Nicholas lived, at least according to legend, in the 4th century. He was a bishop and a man with a generous heart. The most famous story about him concerned a poor widow who had three young girls. The only way young girls without means could survive then, it's still true in many countries today, was as prostitutes. To help them avoid this fate, Nicholas tossed three bags of gold through their window, one to serve as a dowry for each of the girls. Nicholas was one of the most beloved of all Catholic saints. Besides being the patron saint of children, he was also the patron saint of spinsters, of travelers, and of sailors. And a reminder of his story, and he was also a patron saint of pawn shops, where you could see a reminder of his most famous story up until a few decades ago. Maybe some of you still remember these. With the three gold balls that hung on outside pawn shops. Those were a memory of the three bags of gold from the St. Nicholas story. He first became associated with Christmas during the Middle Ages, and one agent of his transformation may have been a 13th century French nun who left gifts for the poor on their doorsteps on the eve of St. Nicholas Day, which was yesterday. As the patron saint of sailors, he was also a favorite of Christopher Columbus, who named an island after him when he came over here in 1492. But Santa wasn't heard of much after that until the 19th century, because the Protestants who founded most of this country didn't want anything to do with Catholic saints or pagan holidays based on ancient solstice festivals. The Puritans, if they'd had a website then, the anti-Christmas sites would have dominated the Puritan website if they'd allowed each other to use it. The Puritans hated Christmas, and they wouldn't allow it to be celebrated here. There was a while in the 17th century when it was even illegal, and you could go to jail if you were caught celebrating Christmas. They didn't like the notion of St. Nicholas as a spirit of giving, and they hadn't yet found another symbol of the spirit of giving that was acceptable to them. So that took a couple hundred more years. But this spirit of giving thing has been symbolized in every culture, everywhere, in some way or other. And Santa Claus was a combination of a whole bunch of cultures and ways of doing this. German children awaited the arrival of either Weihnachtsmann or Kris Kringle each year. And Kris Kringle is another perversion of the name Christkindl, which meant the Christ child. German Protestants didn't like the idea of Catholic saints going around leaving presents, so they invented the story of the Christ child going around leaving presents. France had Père Noël. In Russia, it was a female, a woman, babushka, who went around leaving presents for poor people. The Dutch had long celebrated their feast of St. Nicholas on December 6th. With gifts and food and parties, and they brought that tradition when they came here in the 1600s. Over time, their Sinterklaas became corrupted into Santa Claus, and combined with most of these other stories too, and somewhere around the mid-19th century, Santa Claus started being a real character in American life. Still, if there had been websites in the early 19th century, most of them would have been anti-Christmas, certainly anti-Santa Claus. The first state to make Christmas a legal holiday was Alabama in 1836. It wasn't a legal holiday here in Texas until 1879. What finally brought Christmas into our consciousness was probably the Romantic era, the time when feelings and good feeling things were taking center stage. Everything we know about Christmas became popular in this country then. Christmas cards started in England in the 1850s, and they were popular here by 1880 or so. Christmas trees, which were called German trees, were popular around the same time. In 1856, Franklin Pierce was the first president to bring a German tree into the White House. And then Santa Claus was finally given his most enduring image by a cartoonist who played an amazingly important role in shaping American images. In the 1860s, Thomas Nast gave us the picture of Santa in his sleigh and his outfit. Thomas Nast, you may remember, was also the cartoonist who gave us the pictures of the Republican elephant and the Democratic donkey. A donkey, an elephant, and Santa Claus. What it is an image of the spirit of giving that's born from the most generous and hopeful parts of the human soul. Santa Claus was born from the same manger where all the gods were born, and from the same hopes and yearnings. The spirit of giving that's been celebrated for the past 1,000 years has been a very special kind of spirit. It's a secular spirit. Secular means it's concerned with this world. It's a secular spirit, but a holy one. It's been a spirit of generous giving to people who need gifts. The gifts aren't to help kids fit in with their peers by having the same toy everyone else does. That's the spirit of Walmart. The spirit of Santa Claus was very different. They were gifts given to recognize the humanity of someone, like the 3 bags of gold given to ransom 3 girls from lives on the street. It isn't about getting or giving a lot of presents. It's about giving gifts in the spirit, of the spirit, in tangible form. There are examples of the spirit of Santa Claus everywhere, and I love them. Friday night, which happened to be St. Nicholas Eve, we had a freeze night here, where a couple dozen church members and friends volunteered and cooked dinner and then breakfast for about 50 homeless men. These folks were on Santa's team. We could all be on Santa's team. It's a time to be possessed by a certain kind of spirit. It's about a spirit of giving, but a very high and precious form of giving. It isn't about the money. It's about the caring and recognizing someone else as a child of God and trying to help them feel that way too. The gifts can be simple. They don't have to cost much. From my own childhood, I was surprised when I looked back to try to remember the gifts I'd received over all those years. I can't remember any of the presents that cost very much. The gifts I remember were very personal things. I remember a sweater knitted by an aunt that had sleeves of almost equal length. It was my favorite sweater until I outgrew it. And I loved showing the sleeves off at school every Christmas. It was a gift of mittens knitted by another aunt that were a little big but really, really warm. And when I think back on the most touching gift I ever got at Christmas, it was probably the cheapest of the lot and the most surprising to be so touching. It was from my Uncle Franklin, my father's oldest brother. He sent the same thing to all 50-odd nieces and nephews every year, year after year after year. We could spot it by the shape. It was long and had two lumps in it. Inside, for every single niece and nephew, there were two wooden pencils, a plastic pencil sharpener with a bubble top to catch the wood shavings, and a pack of Wrigley's chewing gum, either spearmint, juicy fruit, or double mint, every year. Then there was a little note that just said Merry Christmas and had our name printed on it. At the time, we all joked about it, that same goofy-looking present every year. I only met my Uncle Franklin a couple times. I know that some of my cousins never met him at all. He had no idea who these kids were that he was sending Christmas presents to. But every Christmas, no matter whether we had been good or bad, naughty or nice, there would be those lumpy It's funny how powerful that is, isn't it? It's a clue about what this is really about. Those lumpy little gifts that just said Merry Christmas. Free. They weren't given to make us fit in with all our friends at school. They certainly weren't given to impress us with Franklin's wealth. They were just given. When I look back, those silly, lumpy little gifts were the background against which all of the Christmases happened. Nothing to do with Jesus or the winter solstice or anything religious. Everything to do with the spirit of giving, the spirit of Santa Claus, with no frills at all, except for those plastic bubble tops to catch the wood shavings. Years later, I imagined Franklin sitting there each year, gift wrapping 50 or so identical gifts, mailing them to nieces and nephews scattered literally all over the world, whom he didn't know and most of whom he would never meet. But he knew who had been born and what our names were, and when we were ready to start receiving these gifts, he obviously had this all worked out on the timetable. He didn't send them until we were about four. And then we got these gifts every year until we graduated from high school. So he had all this written down somewhere that he was checking twice. I think for me, that's the spirit of Santa Claus that I still associate. Franklin would be so happy because I never told him that I liked getting these. When I was young, I thought they were silly. Now, these are the spirit of Christmas for me and the spirit of Santa Claus. I want to convert us to the spirit of Santa Claus this year, to the good one, not the bad one. You don't need a religious bone in your body to enjoy getting and giving the best kinds of gifts of the season. Gifts given simply because you care about someone, because you think that there's something precious about them and you want them to feel that too. Or gifts just given because you want to be on Santa's team. It doesn't have to cost you $1,000. It doesn't measure worth or meaning in that currency. It's a gift of the Spirit, from your spirit to their spirit, because life is short, and we shouldn't let much of it go by without trying to be at least a small blessing to the lives that we can touch. Now, this isn't the kind of Christmas hoopla that you'll see in ads. This is the stuff you see after you say no to all that other junk, and this is the stuff in the background that stays. And you can be a part of it. And I can show you how good it feels to be a part of it because you all were a part of it, even though you didn't know it. Yesterday afternoon at 4:30 in Berkeley, California. Here's an early Christmas present. That's when our ministerial intern from last year, Kathy Harrington, came out from her meeting with the Ministerial Fellowship Committee. I knew they would approve her for entering the ministry. They'd be idiots if they didn't. So on your behalf, I had a lovely, classy, 3-foot bouquet of two-toned Ecuadorian roses delivered to her as she came out of the meeting, accompanied by a 2-pound box of fancy chocolates. The note in the flowers said, "Congratulations and love from your Austin family. We never doubted for a minute." Yesterday was December 6th, which just happened to be St. Nicholas Day. And I gave that gift in your name because generous spirits want company, and the generous spirit of Santa Claus wants all the company it can get. Kathy phoned a few hours later, excited to be finished with the fellowship committee. She wanted me to thank all of you from the bottom of her heart. And she said that the only thing that didn't go as planned, I'd called the hotel 3 times to make sure they got this right, was that the fellowship committee was running an hour late, so she actually got the gift before she went in to see. And she said she read the note and thought to herself, "Boy, I better not screw this up." But every member of this church will now be a part of a warm and lovely memory of Kathy's until the day she dies. It's amazing. That's the magic. That's how it works. And so yesterday, we all played Santa Claus. It's wonderful to be on Santa's team. I recommend it. But we need more people in on this, so spread the word. It's a kind of a conspiracy. It could even be a movement. We hide in the cracks now. But soon,